Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors, and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of The Thunder Heist, and I am joined by my co-hosts, starting with Rob J. Hayes.
Hi, I am Rob J. Hayes, author of The Heresy Within.
Michael R. Fletcher.
Hey, that's me, and I wrote this, which is a book about things and stuff, and has dragons.
It's not an advanced reader copy.
Some people won't like it.
Was that an advanced reader copy, Mike?
It is. This is actually out though, so you know, maybe next time I'll pay attention to what copy I grab.
It's a unadvanced reader copy.
Super
instead.
Slick.
Well done. Dirk Ashton is attending to painters in his house. Oh, he's back. Just as we started recording. Perfect timing.
That's a lovely pan.
That was very cinematic of you.
That was Dirk. A tilt, Rob. A tilt.
I'm sorry. I don't know the technical
Not
term.
Not all of us worked in Hollywood, Dirk.
This is a tilt.
Nice. Dirk Ashton, you want to introduce yourself? We're just doing the introductions.
Hi, sorry, everybody. I'm Dirk Ashton, author of the Paternus Trilogy and all-around knucklehead.
Nice. And we are joined once again by the awesome Peter McLean. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Hi, good to meet you. I'm Peter McLean, and I also wrote a book, or several books, but that's the first one, Priest of Bones.
Awesome stuff. And we're going to be digging into that in this episode. This episode is going to be one of our interrogation-style shows, where we basically just fling a bunch of questions at Peter, and we try to basically pin his whereabouts to Dirk Ashton's backyard at 8 p.m. last night for legal reasons. So let's begin. We won't start with the criminal alleged activities to begin with. We'll just focus on the fictional criminal activities of your characters to begin with. Because I thought we could start by discussing the movie adaptation stuff that is happening with your book.
Yeah, it's actually a TV adaptation.
TV adaptation, yes.
Priest of Bones and the series has been optioned by Heyday Television. This was announced in Deadline Hollywood last year. So they'll be making hopefully they will be making a TV series based on the books. So a common misconception is optioned for television means filming a TV show. And it absolutely does not. It means somebody has bought the rights, the option to possibly turn it into a TV show if they so wish. So I don't know how much I can say, really. I don't really know what's going on. I know a well-known screenwriter has been assigned to write the pilot, which is further than a lot of options get. So that's, I'm very pleased about that, obviously. I mean, that's a thing not many people know, but if a TV company is definitely going to make a thing, a lot of the time they will go and buy up all the options to everything else they can find that's remotely similar to their thing they're definitely going to make. So no, just purely so nobody else can. Or if it's something they think they might want to make might want to make one day in the future, they might buy an option and stick it on the shelf. And again, just so nobody else can. So we will see. But like I say, it's the fact that somebody is actually writing it means it's got a hell of a lot further than a lot really of options. That's a really good sign. Yeah, I'm really pleased with that.
Yeah.
But we will see. I mean, casting and all this sort of thing, we're nowhere near that yet. So
sure.
I don't know where we are, but.
Well, I believe Mike is always available for acting gigs. So
I dare say he is. Yeah, he can be, spear carrier number three who dies in the first scene. I'm sure
he knows that. But. I mean, to be honest, though, I think it makes a lot of sense that they'd pick like Priest of Bones because it's got a lot of comparisons to shows like Peaky Blinders and the like.
Yeah, I mean, technically I write fantasy novels, but I don't really, if we're honest about it. I write gangster thrillers dressed up with some fantasy trappings on them because I like gangsters, but nobody buys gangster books anymore.
No.
No, if I could get away with writing something like The Godfather, I'd do that, but you just can't sell it. You can sell it to TV, and when you say Peaky Blinders is hugely popular and various other things, but I mean, book-wise, it just doesn't seem to be a thing anymore. Don't know why, but I think it is quite adaptable. I mean, it's written, as I say, as a thriller with thriller pacing, and it's not going to cost an arm and a leg like your Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones must have done. I mean, you could basically, between Edinburgh and Prague, that's your stage sets. It's as simple as that. That is very quasi-historical kind of setting. So, there's no dragons or orcs or anything like that. It's just people killing each other in the back streets of somewhere like Old Town Edinburgh.
Good old-fashioned family fun.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
How do you manage? I just actually asked, because I put out a call on Twitter for questions for this episode, and I think one person sent back asking, how does Peter manage to write something that like a lot of people are going to compare to Peaky Blinders? And like, how do you sort of, I suppose, within yourself, like balance a love and an inspiration from sort of the gangster genre versus like trying to do your own thing? And I don't know, how do you just sort of manage your homages and your interests?
I do love a good homage, I must admit. I mean, there's bits from The Godfather in there. There's
nice
bits from Casino, all that sort of thing that, only fans of the genre are going to spot a lot of them. And I think because it is fantasy, it's got magic in it, which obviously makes it very different. And I mean, Peaky Blinders is the four brothers, isn't it, as the central characters. But I mean, my main character has got a brother, but he's more of a liability than an ally. And his best mate in the world is a woman he served in the war with. So, it's kind of like you've got different characters. And there's Billy the Boy, who's was from Thomas's regiment. He's a young lad. Then nobody's quite sure how old he is. He's a feral orphan they found in one of the cities they conquered. And he's the one that turns out to be able to do magic. And he's a creepy little sod, basically. Nobody understands him. He doesn't understand normal people, but he can do stuff, which is extremely useful when you're running a criminal empire and you've got a magician and your rival gang hasn't.
Nice.
So stuff like that. You've got the fantastic elements in there, obviously.
What is your favorite gangster movie?
Oh, The Godfather, both of them. There are only two Godfather movies. It is none. They were going to make a third one, but they didn't.
Does not exist.
That's my all-time favorite. But I mean, I like all of them, really. Goodfellas is another strong
Goodfellas is probably my favorite.
And I like some of the old Jimmy Cagney stuff as well, the old black and whites and all of that. Love it. But actually, you can't top The Godfather, in my opinion.
What about the rest of you guys?
Very few times I will say the film is better than the book is The Godfather.
Yeah.
Echo.
And the book's not bad, to be fair.
Yeah. The book's pretty good too, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it is. But it's amazing how much they changed in the adaptation, and it nearly
still
all very
worked.
Much for the better.
Yeah.
It does. Superb couple of movies.
So would you say like more of the inspiration for Priest of Bones and the sequels comes from like film and television rather than?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely that. I mean, when my agent was pitching it, we came up with The Godfather with Swords as the logline. That we used to sell it to the publishers, and it's basically that's what it is. Because like I say, if you call something a fantasy novel, people have got expectations of the genre. Dragons and orcs and a long quest and great sweeping landscapes. I mean, the first book is all set in the same city; it doesn't go anywhere. So it's not that kind of a fantasy, if you see what I mean. But yeah, no, we definitely use use screen comparisons.
Nice.
I actually used The Godfather as a comp title when I was pitching it to my agent in the first place. So yeah, comp titles don't necessarily have to be books or books in the same genre. It has to be something that evokes the same sort of thing.
Feel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I think so anyway, but worked for me.
Yeah. Got a question here from another listener on Twitter who says, when it comes to characterization, what steps do you take to ensure that your readers are connecting with your characters? And is that even something that you try to achieve?
Ooh, it's, you know what? It's not really. I mean, I think when I'm writing it, if I'm not connecting with a character, then I sort of think, no, this person just don't work. You need to change something. You've written a wrong or whatever. But I mean, I don't write characters to be characters in a book. I try and write them to be actual people. And some actual people aren't very empathetic. You know what I mean? They're just not. And I think you wouldn't want the whole cast to be like that. If there's a character you think, oh, I hate this bloke, I wish somebody would hurry up and stab him, then, you know, there's some people I wish someone would hurry up and stab. So I don't see that there's a problem with that necessarily.
It's quite interesting because you've said it yourself, your main character, Thomas Piety, he's not a hero. But he is a very almost charismatic character who you want to root for and like. Yeah, so exactly how did that. You go about sort of like doing that, like creating him?
Well, he's one of the archetypal gangster types. He's your Michael Corleone or your Tommy Shelby kind of person. And they tend to be the sort of person that do well in organized crime. There's, you need to be charismatic. You need to have your men and anyone in your organization ferociously loyal. And just being scary isn't going to cut it to that extent.
Mm.
So they've got to love him. They've got to want to follow him. But yeah, he's a completely self-serving bastard. Of course he is. He's a gangster. You know what I mean? But he's also, he grew up dirt poor as an abused child in the slums of Ellenburg, which is where he returns to after the war. And I'll be a bit careful of spoilers here, but in founding his criminal empire, he's a bit of an old school gangster like Vito Corleone, in that he protects his people. Yes, they have to pay him protection money to protect them from him, but he will also protect them from other people, and he keeps law and order on the streets. And he calls protection money taxes. You pay your taxes to live on his street.
Nice.
And he keeps the peace and law and order and provides welfare for anybody. You know, he won't see anybody starve to death on his streets for lack of work kind of thing. And you think, yeah, he's a gangster and he does this and that and the other. So he's a government then, isn't he? He taxes the population, runs the police and provides state welfare. It's a developing theme throughout the book. That if you look at organized crime and you look at formal government, there isn't a hell of a lot of difference.
They start to converge.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's a cool take.
That's a pet theme of mine, that one. It comes more and more to the fore as you go through the series.
Is theme something that you're consciously thinking about when you're writing a book?
Oh, no, not in a high school English lit sort of way, no. But I've got a sort of thing I want to say. And by the end of book four, I think I've well and truly said it, shall we say.
Okay. Interesting.
But you'll have to wait till August to find that out.
Nice. Nice. Dirk, you had a question?
Yes. I was going to ask, what is your background in writing, Peter? Do you have a creative writing MFA? Or?
I have not had a creative writing lesson in my life.
Me neither.
I finished high school just, and that's when me and education parted company, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So no, I'm absolutely completely self-taught. I wrote, Wolf of the Rose Throne is my second series. So I had three urban fantasies published by Angry Robot before I wrote Priest of Bones. And I wrote the first one of them by accident, to be perfectly honest with you. So,
you just had a pen in your hand, a bit of paper, and you fell over and, oh, there's a novel.
Oh, look, there's a book. Well, it wasn't far off it, to be honest. So I used to be on a writing forum on a site called SFF World years and years ago, and they used to do little monthly writing competitions and sort of flash fiction type of things, and I did quite well at that, and I thought, yeah, it's quite fun this.
And then I realized I lied. I did take a creative writing course my freshman year in college.
Oh, okay.
I'm not part of the show anymore, Dirk.
Super introductory courses and screenwriting courses, I don't think really count as creative writing, but maybe.
Would you know? Oh, this is creative writing.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, we don't study prose. We do study style. There's a certain, but the style has to very much serve a very strict format for screenplays. They're a different animal. You can't have any fancy prose. There are certain things you simply can't do in screenplays.
I've never written for the screen.
It's more a craft than it is an art like creative writing. Though putting together the story and the structure and stuff like that, I guess, goes more into creative writing. But that's definitely my background.
Definitely a different skill set. I mean, I tried. I was commissioned to write an audio drama script for Black Library when I was writing for them. It was an absolute disaster. We gave up in the end. I said, keep the fee, keep this crap, just go away and never knock on that door again. I couldn't do it to save my life. It's a completely different thing, isn't it?
Really. Well, some people do the transition back and forth really well, and some people just can't.
No, it didn't work for me at all.
But you have written for Black Library before. You have got a few.
I did quite a few short stories for them. Yeah, but I just have the time anymore, to be honest with you. But they're quite fun to do. But I'm not into the whole space marine thing. Most of them wanted me to write Primarchs, and I was like, you know, I'm just not interested in this.
Did you write about Imperial Guard? Because Guard's right up your alley.
Imperial Guard all the way. Yeah,
represent
good old Astra Militarum, because they're just men and women, grunts on the ground. They're not transhuman super beings. I can't get interested in transhuman super beings. I want to write about, you know, your proper mudfoot soldier up to his neck in a foxhole being shot at, scared out of his wits, because people can relate to that.
Yeah.
You can imagine what that must be like to an extent, you know? But these sort of 8-foot giants tromping around in power armor, I can't relate to what that's like one little bit, you know what I mean?
Didn't one of your Black Library stories actually win an award?
No, it was a finalist for the Scribe Awards. No Hero. This was the story, which I was quite proud of, I must admit.
Yeah, they actually sent that to me when they approached me and said, do you want to write a Black Library story? They actually sent me your story to say, look, this is cool. The thing we're after.
Hey, did you do it in the end?
I did. I wrote two Black Library stories, both around Imperial Guard as well, because much like you, I was like, I just want like the guy who, he's just a soldier and there's all these, you know, like demigods basically all fighting around him and he's just trying to get through.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, that's what appeals to me about it as well.
The first one I wrote was just, it was entirely set within a tank, one of the sort of like super heavy Baneblade tanks. And it was just one person trying to survive while this tank's rumbling through a battlefield. And there's
I think I read that and didn't clock it was you, to be honest. I'm sure that's in one of the anthologies they sent me.
There's another one as well, I think. But yeah, all about the Imperial Guard for me.
Mm. Absolutely.
Mike, you also wrote for the Black Library, which for people who don't know, that's Warhammer 40K.
It wasn't Space Marine stuff. It was their Age of Sigmar or whatever. I wanted to write stuff about gods. I wanted to work the gods into the stories. And they were like, no. Come on.
I guess that was too big picture.
And they were like, nah, that. You can't do that. Make your story smaller. I was like, fine. So I did Necromancers and shit like that.
Okay. Because you published something in the end, right?
Yeah, I did three stories with them in total.
They're quite precious about their lore. You're not allowed to
step
outside of the lines.
No. Yeah. And you can kill as many people as you want, but don't say fuck.
Yeah, it's a whole thing doing time, right? I mean, I had to approach it from the point of view that I'm not really writing stories here. I'm writing advertising copy to sell toy soldiers. Once you get your head around that small technicality, it starts to make a bit more sense.
Yeah, that's logical. Yeah. That's pretty logical. Yeah. So, Peter...
It was fun to do, but yeah, you have to learn so much about stuff that person who I couldn't give a rat's ass about, do you know what I mean? Because if you get the wrong type of ammunition in the wrong type of gun, they will know and they will tell you off. And you'll say, oh, for the love of God.
One of the ones they came up for me was I tried to have a character, like one of the Imperial Guard characters, picking up a weapon from like a different race and using it. And they're like, no, you can't do that. They wouldn't touch it. It's against their religion. They can't touch a weapon from another race. I was like, but he just wants to survive and there's an enemy.
He just wants to not die.
No, I know.
So, Peter, you mentioned that you're pretty busy with these days with writing and stuff. Is that, are you full-time with writing, part-time? Just what's the
I wish. I've got a full-time job like most people have. I did go full-time writing for 18 months. And I managed to take a really good package when I left Hewlett-Packard and I just sold the first two Wolf the Rose Throne books to Penguin. So I had a nice fat advance sitting in my bank as well as my redundancy check. And I thought, oh, you know what, let's give it a shot. Let's just be an author. That sounds good, doesn't it? And it was lovely. I'd spent a year and a half at home with my missus and had a really nice time and a lot of days out. And I didn't write any more than I was writing around a full-time job. I thought, well, this doesn't really make sense. I might as well be earning money and have a pension scheme and stock options again. Do you know what I mean? So I went back to corporate life, but in a less demanding job. So it gave me a bit more time to write. Because I mean, when I was at HP, I had to do on call 1 week in three. And, you know, you'd be getting phoned up at 3 o'clock in the morning because the data center was on fire or whatever, and that's you up until you go to bed the next day kind of thing. And I was just that was backbreaking. So I've just took a day job that it's only during the day now, which is just I do make my own hours really, but sort of 8 till 4 as a rule. Come home, have a drink, have dinner, and come down to the office and crack on usually.
Nice. So you're an evening writer.
Honestly, if I didn't have to get up and work in the mornings, I'd be nocturnal. When I wasn't working, I was sort of writing till 2 or 3 a.m.
Cool.
Pretty consistent. Well, no, my wife wouldn't agree with you because she reckon I always used to wake her up when I came to bed. But it suits me. I'm very much an evening guy.
Okay, interesting.
I've seen a thing on Twitter called 5 a.m. Write Club. These people that get up at 4 in the morning to do their writing before they go to work. And I say, I can't think of anything worse.
Just going to point down towards Fletcher. He's down
there.
Yeah,
I used to.
Really? You're one of them.
I was at 4 o'clock in the morning, get my 2 hours in before I go to work. And
well, I mean, I think it's one of those things that's whatever works for you. And
exactly.
There's wrong way to do any of this, but oh God, I couldn't do it. I'm barely functional at 7 in the morning. I'm on 4.
I found like by the time I got home from work, I couldn't write because I was too tired. And at that
point,
whiskey and slump in a chair and stare at a wall. You know, that's all I could manage.
That's a good evening,
there's no whiskey involved in writing at night. There very much is whiskey involved. But, you know.
It's funny you mention that because one of the tweets that I saw someone ask me was, what was it? Could you exist in a world without whiskey? From Tim.
Oh, well, I suppose there's brandy and rum. And wouldn't be my first choice. I mean, to me, creative juices are a light amber in color. And come in a bottle that says whiskey on it.
I must admit, through listening to Priest of Bones and the sequels, it did make me want to try brandy. I'm more of a whiskey drinker myself, but you know, Thomas Piety swigged brandy at a rate of knots.
I know, I'm forever getting readers asking me to recommend my favorite brandy. I don't actually drink brandy. It's just like, I haven't got whiskey in this world. They've got brandy, so that's what he drinks.
What are the other common sort of like listener questions or feedback or things that they pick up and talk to you about in your books?
You know, I get asked more about the bloody cat than I do about my books. I accidentally made the cat a bit of an internet sensation.
This is like Rob with his dog. As soon as you're an author and you pop an animal out there, people just go crazy for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nobody wants to know about my books. They just want to know what Beagleface is up to.
Yeah, that's right.
I know the feeling, yes. Yes, I think if you go to hashtag stand the railway cat, you can find just about every picture of my cat I've ever taken.
But, nice.
So I get asked about that a lot. What else do people ask me? Quite a few people have picked up that Ellenberg is basically just Edinburgh spelled differently, which is kind of cool. But I mean, why make a city up when you've literally been there?
Yeah, I mean, and it already feels like a fictional city anyway, the one time I visited. So. Well placed. No, just it has like so many weird geographic details. So it has that massive castle that's on a mountain in the middle of a city. with this sloping road leading up to it. And you're like, this is such basic geography. So unrealistic.
It's great. Really bonkers, isn't it? This is what it's happens really when you build on an extinct volcano, you know?
Yeah. Is that where it comes from? On an extinct volcano?
Whoa. Yeah. Well, off the sea is what's left of the volcano, and the massive crag of basalt with the castle on top presumably was an eruption at some point in the dinosaur age. Absolutely no idea. But
that is so cool.
But wow. It's an amazing city. It just does not look or feel like a modern capital city.
You think, not at all.
Where are the skyscrapers and shit? They're all in Glasgow. Edinburgh looks like this. Deal with it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Far out. That's awesome. Couple of other quick ones before we wrap this episode up. The first one is, what would you say is your biggest strength as a writer? And then you can follow it up just so you don't get too big-headed by talking about what you think is your biggest weakness as a writer. So biggest strength.
My biggest strength
weakness.
As a writer. I think
job applications, isn't it? Where you're like...
It is. Yeah, I know. I'm going to be asked what I want to be in 5 years' time in a minute. I think one of my biggest strengths is dialogue, to be honest. I always think, if you're reading a book and the character's dialogue sounds like dialogue in a book, someone's fucked up somewhere, because it just shouldn't. It should sound like people talking. And I think I'm quite good at that. I'm prepared to be corrected. I'm not precious about it, but I think that would be my answer.
Nice.
As for my weakness, as a man who wrote a trilogy that is 4 books, planning. God above. Yeah. So... I like to do a plot and an outline and everything before I write. And I outlined Priest of Bones, and that turned into Priest of Bones and Priest of Lies, because I'm like, oh, God. Luckily, it wasn't under contract then, so I could do what I like. And I outlined Priest of Grounds, which was going to be the third and final book. Now, this is after the first two have been published. I'm writing away on Priest of Grounds. And I've got a 15-page outline in front of me. And about 90,000 words on the document, and I'm on page fucking 1 of the outline. And it's just like, Houston, we have a problem. So my wonderful editor, Joe Fletcher at Joe Fletcher Books, very kindly agreed that book 3 could be book 3 and 4.
Nice.
Winner. That's all right then.
Heck yeah.
I'll chop it in half. That's the logical thing to do. Chops outline in half, reads outline the first half. Well, it's shit now, isn't it? Because it just stops. This isn't book shaped. This is half a book shape, because that's exactly what it is. It's half a book. So the plot gymnastics I had to go through to make Gallows work as a book in its own right. I'm never, ever, ever doing it again. I had to change who died when and move great political events around, and then nothing else worked after that because I'd moved bits. So yes, Pete is not good at planning books. Let it be known.
Nice. And final question as we close out this episode. Let's say you could only give one bit of advice to an aspiring writer out there. What would it be? Apart from buy all your books and just...
Well, it goes without saying, read a lot and read in a lot of different genres. Don't only read your own genre. But yeah, read a lot.
And pay attention.
The most important thing.
There's a difference between reading and paying attention.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. You have to learn to read as a writer.
That's a real skill. It's a skill that has to be developed.
Yeah, I find...
It can be difficult to look at how a chapter is structured, how the lines are written, how the dialogue flows. It can be hard. It can be really hard.
I find myself, if I'm reading something I think is really good, trying to stop myself enjoying it and start reverse engineering how it works,
exactly
why I'm enjoying it, which does kind of suck the joy out of life, but it's how you learn, I think. Definitely.
At least early on. I mean, I taught film, and I told my students, if I didn't ruin their enjoyment of films for at least a year, I wasn't doing my job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see exactly what you mean.
Dirk, enemy of fun.
Ultimate fun police. Great.
Yeah. Writing really does kill your enjoyment of reading.
I haven't found that.
People are better at it. I can't turn off my editor brain.
Mine did for a while, sort of, but not anymore. I actually enjoy books almost more now.
I agree with that, because I think it makes you appreciate how hard it is. I think it just makes you appreciate how hard the books are. Yeah, that is fair.
Yeah,
I think it lifts your taste and then hopefully leads you to better reading experiences because of that. And then also makes you appreciate the books more, because you know how hard it is to actually put a great story together. That's my thoughts on it, at least.
Yeah, and I think you were.
Awesome. All right. Well, that is a good place to end this episode. Peter, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate you joining us again.
Oh, thanks for having me. Been good fun.
Thanks,
dude. Excellent. If you want to support this show, you can head to patreon.com/wizardswarriorswords. We're going to have some bonus episodes up there at some stage. So if you want more ramblings and banter between us, you can go check it out on there. Thank you again, everybody, for watching or listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, everyone.
Cool.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.